Everyone, this is Chris Keys on very special Rig Rundown. So glad to tell you this. AC/DC, you guys have been asking for it. Lucky enough to have Trace Foster here. Might recognize him from the Joe Perry Rig Rundown. He is very gracious with his time, and we're going to talk about Angus Young's and Stevie Young's gear. Let's start with Angus.
I'm excited to see this too, by the way.
Are you going to watch it?
Yeah, it's going to be great. Exciting.
Let's get right into it. We want to know about the guitars, okay. Specifically the SGs that Angus is known to use for okay. years.
First off, I want to say that at first I thought I'll pull out 15, 16 of Angus's guitars, but that's not how he works.
Yeah.
Angus is very specific about a couple guitars that he really enjoys, and he'll play them all tour. That's kind of what he does.
Okay.
So I've brought those out, which is my normal daily routine, and I brought one of the new ones that he's been playing, which we all do, right. which we use once in a while. So what I want to do is I'll start you right here with his main guitar that he's using this tour.
Alrighty.
Okay. This guitar is a 1967 Ooh. SG. Okay. He thought it was a little older, but we dated it off the serial number. Okay. The pots have been changed 1,000 times because he sweats and these get rusty and you gotta change them. So this has all been basically changed. Pickups get changed. Anyways, this is like I said.
Give us some specifics okay. if you can remember the pots and the pickups, because people are gonna wanna know this.
Well, it's just standard Gibson
okay.
pots I put
just
that
to make
in.
Sure there's
500K,
no, okay.
nothing funky, nothing crazy.
Okay.
Wired standard, just like anybody else would.
Okay.
You know, tones, volumes, two pickup, everything works. Nothing funky there. These are custom wound Seymour Duncans. The DC resistance is 7.7. So that's kind of important that they're all right around that same kind
Alrighty.
Of vibe, okay? So that really is our consistency.
Do you know, like, would you say, like, a Seymour Duncan pickup that's off the rack that's similar to this? Is like a JB or a Pearly Gates?
You know, those are hotter, I would say.
Okay.
Now I'm sure there's going to be 8,000 comments right below my feet
yeah,
right now. People go, that guy's an idiot. But there you
I'm
go.
I'm the idiot.
Yeah, no, maybe we both are. But so you can tell. Like, I've replaced these pickups before because, again, you know, he sweats and it gets in there.
Yeah.
I've tried everything. There's foam underneath here. These pickups are wax, which is important as well.
Okay.
To keep them working through the show.
Okay.
Because otherwise, water, electronics, not so
Fizzle
good.
Fizzle fry.
Yeah. So that's this guitar.
All
okay.
right.
Like I said, he's had this guitar since, we think he said, roughly the Let There Be Rock album, so 77. So
it's
he's had this guitar
time.
A very long time.
And okay? that standard tuning?
Standard tuning.
Night?
We are at 440, straight up just like the records
okay.
now, and it's just, it sings.
It's a rock and roll
That's,
machine.
It's a serious rock and roll machine.
Before we get on to the next one,
yeah.
strings
okay.
specifically?
Strings are, they're all, the strings are all the same.
Okay.
One thing you should probably know that most people probably already know is these guys are creatures of habit. It's, Angus won't change anything if he doesn't have to. These are, Ernie Ball 9 Slinkies, 9 to 42, standard gauge,
okay.
pink amp, you know, pink little.
Yeah.
That's what he uses.
Okay.
Nothing funny. We use Fender extra heavy picks. They say Fender extra heavy on them. That's what they do. That's, you know, I mean, it's
simple.
Pretty, there you go. See, straightforward. Fender
right, there
extra
it is.
Heavy. There it is, everybody. There's the pick. Now, he does have picks with his name and his, you know, his character on it. Those are giveaway picks.
Okay.
These are the real, this is what we play with. Okay,
so if someone gets a Fender extra heavy, that's a special one.
Yeah, and he'll, I mean, another thing is they don't make these anymore like this. These are actually hot stamped.
Oh.
Now they're all silk screen.
Why does he prefer the older ones?
Because he can grab it
a little easier.
There's a grip there, which is quite standard. Okay, let's go over here to number two. This is my favorite.
Why is it your favorite?
Because this is the guitar from the Back in Black tour.
Oh.
So this is like,
yeah,
you can
yeah.
feel the energy with this
like
guitar.
I feel like I shouldn't even be this close.
I know, don't touch it, whatever you do. You might. This is amazing, isn't it? This guitar is a 1970 SG Custom. This used to have three pickups and it was walnut colored.
Wow.
You can find pictures online of him with this, which is unbelievably cool. And it had the bar,
yep.
and it was just really, really cool. He didn't like the three pickups after a while. He wanted to change it, so he painted it. You probably cannot see this, but it's been fixed now. There was a square chunk taken out of here. That's where he used to put the battery, the wireless pack.
Oh, for
because
the Vega.
Because when he would go out front, people are grabbing at him, and the pack would always get ripped off the strap or something really funny would happen. So this that was perfect. The problem is wireless, electrical, up against sweaty body
yeah.
creates a little bit of an issue. So we repaired that this year. a year ago, January, we fixed that. Man. And this is the guitar that he did basically the whole Back in Black tour on.
Wow.
Now, as far as the recording of the record, I don't know, but he bought this right before started working on it. So I'm assuming it's on the record as well.
Man. And I mean, obviously they're finished in black, but for both these guitars, they seem pretty clean. Like, I mean, it has surgery in the back.
Okay,
but
it's if you actually look at these guitars up close, they're kind of funny because it does look really clean. But as you get up close, these guitars, I mean,
Yeah.
He plays these guitars really hard, and so there's a lot of maintenance. So if you can probably see, I mean, it's pretty crusty.
Yeah.
And we only change stuff when it's broken.
Yeah.
This is the if it ain't broken, don't touch it. Seriously, and that's what they live by, and it's worked for 40 something years. So I'm not going to change it.
Yeah, right. So,
and let's see what else.
And people had asked about specifically, and maybe you don't know, or maybe you do, is where he rides in the tone knob and the volume.
I do know.
Okay, yeah, because people were always curious about how he rolls that off and on.
What he does is roughly eight is his rhythm area, but he knows from the stage, he'll find that spot where it's just about to take off, and that's his go-to spot. And once he finds it, he's good to go. And then when he needs more, he's got that extra couple little, you know. And that's a 70s thing. That's what we used to in the 70s. That's what they did. They didn't have all these boost pedals and all this other stuff. They rode volumes, you know. Noisy amps, volume off between and breaks in between songs. You know, he's still that way. As you'll see when you see his rig, it's pretty much been the same way for a long time.
Years.
Okay, so that's the number two guitar. So this is the number one this tour. This is his number two.
Is this like a backup, or is this one set up for certain songs?
No, it's there is no guitar specific song.
Okay.
This is his guitar. He will play it till it's out of tune. Sometimes he'll look at me and he'll like, "Am I out?" Because you know he can't.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes you're in the moment, you can't tell, and I'll be like, "Yes, come over here," you know. Otherwise, I just let him go. So the last show he played every single song but one on this guitar, and it was in tune. Because he's got a really good touch.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty amazing. So I'll show you the third one here. This is actually a Brian Ray model.
Oh, from Paul McCartney's band.
From Paul McCartney's band.
Yeah.
Brian gave this to Angus. Big Angus fan. He personally said, "I want you to have one of these." And it was made with the Angus's specs. So it's amazing. I put the Seymour Duncan's in there. It's the only thing we did to change it. And he uses this one now too. It sounds really, really good. Feels good. I mean, the thing about these guitars, every single one of them feels totally different.
I bet.
You grab one, the neck feels right. He grabs another one, the neck's different. And that's just the way they were.
What happened
back
here?
Then.
We got a mismatch. Or was that?
No. Okay. He likes
the
neural for the grip. Yeah. So that's what he does there. And like I said, the only thing we've changed, I think, is the pickups, and that's it. I mean, it's a rock machine.
And before, maybe we will talk about this when we move over there, but the wireless units.
Okay, we can do
some
over here now. Actually, let's do that over there.
All right.
Because
that's where we're looking at.
That's where it's going.
All right, let's go there.
Let's move.
All right, so we're making the move over to the rack here. We're underneath the stage, next to the cannons. Trace.
This is holy ground. You
yes,
know that,
I can. I feel. I feel not worthy, but you know, to steal the line from Wayne's World.
I really just want to say this. The first time that I literally touched these amps and these guitars and everything, it was like...
Did you pinch yourself?
It was deep, man. It was one of those things you just go, wow, this is it. This is what it's all about. And it's, you know, so there's always that special care and special, because this is rock royalty here.
Yeah.
This isn't just, you know, some band that'll be working Guitar Center next week. This is the real deal.
This is what everyone's been hearing
exactly
for years and years, man.
So there you go. Okay, so where do you want to? You want to start over here?
I want to start with the wireless.
Let's start over here with my power first.
Let's go there.
Aha. Okay. This is good. You're going to love this. Ready? This is called a Kakutsu.
Oof.
Okay? It's a Japanese power supply. This right here is probably one of the secret weapons of this rig, and it's a very expensive secret weapon, because what this does is it's a power supply that allows me, this whole rig's on 240.
Okay.
This allows me to dial in exact voltages and it will sustain that. So I've got it at 236 right now. Optimal voltage for Marshalls has always been 234. Mike Hill, who's responsible for basically the JCM 800, told me straight up, 234. 234 was a little spongy for what we had going on. Mm. So we went to 236, and it's just spot on. And also, this allows us to stay at 60 hertz, 60 cycles, whether we're in Europe or whether we're here. So once we get everything biased and tweaked in, we now won't have to change it because we're in a different, it's so consistent. Okay. So I know that these amps are going to sound as close, you know, there's elements as far as outdoors and, you know, rainy, sunny, there's those elements, but as far as power-wise, it's a no-brainer. There is a parametric in here. What this is for is when we do really small places, there's a...
when does AC/DC do small places?
Rehearsals. Let me say that. Okay, sorry.
I feel like this basketball arena is
this is
kind of small.
20,000 small. there's like a resonant frequency in his guitar and the rig. When there's a wall in front of it, every time he hits the kick drum, even if he's not playing, it starts feeding back. So we just notch out a little 240, 120, the lower, overtone, and it's gone, takes it right away. So that's not used, that's not in the loop right now. That's only for, you know, rehearsals and stuff. Perfect, okay. Now we can go to the rack. Okay, sure, Axient, best wireless by far. I don't know if you're familiar with these.
No, I'm not.
Okay, the Axiom actually, it stores frequencies and it will tell us, hey, there's an issue, we should change channels. And you can program it to where it'll change automatically, it'll change his pack out there and change at the receiver, or you can do it manually. We, of course, I think it's set to just let it change. This is all run into the monitor world, where our monitor engineer, John, actually allows it to pick frequencies. I think it stores like 8 frequencies. So I mean, and I don't know if it's ever changed frequencies ever. I mean, it's pretty rock solid, this thing. And it sounds amazing. I think he could go to another city and it would still be working. So we love that. These are spare batteries for days. Okay, so here's the signal flow. It goes wireless, 4 channels, into this box that I had built by Mike Hill. Okay, the Mike Hill box is 4 in, okay? And it's 4 right there, 1, 2, 3, 4. This allows me to either have all the packs on or only one of them. So I have all of mine at all times. So no matter what, Angus can go, I want that guitar. Here you go, it's ready to go. It's right here is a back, there's a 70-foot cable that sits around the corner just in case all else fails, which it never has, thankfully.
But you're ready.
And we're ready. And it has its own little trim pot, so if we need to, you know, we match the levels. So that's good. From there, this is a backup to it. Everything's pretty much has its own backup. From this guy, it comes to a one out. It's 4 in, 1 out. The 1 out actually goes into, yes, the Schaefer replica.
Everyone's been asking.
Of course. This is the first tour he's ever used them. So it's not like he's been using them hidden for 40 years.
Yeah.
It's in a... I don't know what you want to know about these things, but I can tell you what it does for me and for Angus is it's not his definitive tone. Let me just say that.
And then, I guess real quick, to give a history to people that are familiar, he used those in conjunction with his wireless unit to supposedly get the boost signal.
Ken Schaefer, when he built the original wirelesses that most rock guitar players used back in the 70s, put a preamp in the box because of the signal loss from the wireless. There's a rumor that Angus was recording back in black and wasn't happy with his guitar tone, and Mutt Lang had asked him, well, what's different? And Angus had said, well, the only thing different in the chain is I'm not on my wireless. And they said, well, use your wireless. So rumor has it that he used the, I've never asked him about it.
Yeah.
Maybe I will today. But he used the wireless to record. So it's, at that point, it really was part of his thing. He's obviously had his sound for 20 years without these things. What this allows us to do is it allows us to really kind of tighten it all together, because I've got 9 different amps going everywhere. It allows it to really come together and really just sing. And we're able to dial in just enough, he calls it the fizz box, just enough fizz in there to give him that sustain that he likes. I mean, it's really cool. I mean, it's a really good idea.
So he prefers the towers versus, because now they do have a pedal unit too now, a stomp box.
Yeah, and we've never even tried the stomp box. We've just always, Phil had brought one of these over to Angus when they're in the studio doing the last record. And that's where it all started. And then I have 2 of those. One's a backup. This is a backup to that one. From there, so we've got wireless 4-1 into this, okay? It goes into a hush pedal, the Rocktron. because when you're dealing with old 70s amps, you got a lot of
and
these are cranking, as you'll see in a second. Okay, so then from the Hush, which is barely on, by the way, it's very, because if there's too much, he feels it and he wants to turn back. So it's just taking the edge off, like rolling off. It's almost like a noise gate than anything else. These things are a lot more subtle than some of those. Some of those just really squash. This is a little more rolling off the edges, I like to say. So from the Rocktron, it goes into the JD7. From the JD7, it goes to amps galore. Goes into every head has its own channel, so I can turn them on and off. I can check phase. I can, you know, because as I'll tell you in a second, as we go across, we are changing these heads all the time. We go through a lot of amps.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. We, in rehearsals, we had, I think it was 62 heads just to go through what we need. I have probably 10, 12 backups.
Wow.
And we have a full-time amp guy on the road that his job is to put them all back together every day.
Where's he at? Like at some bunker?
I'll show you. He's in a room. We'll take him to meet Simon. He's in a bunker. He's in there. He's like just, you know, amps everywhere and parts, and he's in there soldering away. Yeah, and he's it's a full-time job. Because what we do is, well, I'll tell you about the amps first, and then we'll get to the specifics. But yeah. I thought this was going to be a quick one, but I guess it's going to be a little more in-depth than I thought. So let's get to the heads. I've read so many articles of Angus's tone, and it's pretty interesting how people think that we've arrived, you know, where we're at now. But these are all 100 watt heads. Okay, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I have 9 heads. Okay, this is the arena setup. This is not the stadium setup.
This is the club setup.
This is the club. Yeah, this is the practice rig. And what we do, we use 100 watt heads. They're all 100 watt. They're all super leads. And we have, like I said, I have like 12 backup heads. So they come in and out. Mm-hmm. And I think I have two or three super basses, which should probably freak people out that we're actually, you know, using super basses.
Yeah.
But these are all super leads. I think 5 years ago, which would be last tour, maybe two tours ago, I wasn't here, so I can't quote us, they added a master volume.
Why is that?
I think they were looking for a little more gain with the ability to turn it down. So now we've got a preamp and a master. So it's, you know, it's a little more JCM-ish, right?
Yep.
Okay. That works out really, really well.
Is there a year specific or year time frame that he wants to get these in terms of the heads themselves?
It's all about the sound. If you open up every one of these heads, they're all completely different. Mm-hmm. Some have had a lot of things done to them. Some have never been touched. Some are like museum pieces. Some look like, you know, their user prides are still working. But overall, we have a lot of the reissues, which is, I think they were 1987.
Okay.
And what the 87 allows us to do is we can do more things to them, and we're not hacking up the museum piece we're talking about. We have, he has heads that are just for the studio. That are like the pristine, you know, the plexis and this, and they're just like, we don't even touch those. We have heads that are just for this specific purpose. But what we do is the secret, so you know, nice little flame action going on. That's not my amps, I hope. Not yet, anyways.
Well, we gotta go take them to the amp guy.
That's right. We'll show the amp guy. What we do is, one of the secrets with this rig is when we bias the amps, we don't do mathematical calculations. We go ahead and we just do actual playing while he's biasing it. And so what we do is we get to a certain point and then we push the envelope.
Just a little bit more.
We just make sure that, you know, we got an amp guy. So we blow up a bunch of tubes. It's so his sound. I mean, his sound has always been on the edge, and it's always that. It's the greatest rock and roll tone ever. So to achieve that, we got to push the boundaries, and sometimes we push them pretty far. I did blow up 3 heads in one show. That's the most I've blown up.
What show was that?
I don't remember. I like to forget those things. Okay. It was in Europe somewhere. I know that. So we're pretty good now. Once we get indoors and everything kind of stabilizes, we can kind of get these things tweaked in, and they last probably 3-4 shows in the tubes, and we just keep replacing tubes and we just check them. And
are there any specific tubes that you guys are going for?
We use JJ's right now.
Okay. imagine 34s.
Yeah, they're all EL 34, sorry. And you might want to take a look at the settings, because that's what will freak people out the most is the settings, because you would never imagine this is the settings. This is kind of old. General, they move a little bit depending on the amp, but...
Yeah, they're all kind of the same ballpark. I know that obviously is a little generally different, but...
We have the presence is on one, bass is on three, middle's on three, treble's on three. This is our volumes on six, and eight's the preamp. So you just get that little preamp gain. So it's a lot different than... when I watch people saying how the tone is, they're all over the place. This is what it is. This is, as you see, there's...
Yeah, they're all about the same.
And... what we do when we set all this stuff up, we actually go through each individual amp one at a time. We tweak it, we dial it, move on to the next amp. Our front of house guy, Pab, has been with him for a really long time. He knows how it's supposed to sound. And he'll be up on the stage when we do this. It's a long, involved process, usually every day. We don't just throw in, turn stuff on. Because like I said to you earlier, with Angus, there is no pedals to hide something that's not right. You can't, you know, just... turn up the distortion pedal, or you know, turn the delay, more delay, or this. It's got to be right. He doesn't sound check. He comes in every night, and he gets his guitar on, and he goes, and it's got to be right. And that's the job.
I'm gonna give a shout out to my man Brett Petrusik. Took his son to his first rock concert up in Minneapolis, AC/DC. He said it was the greatest live sound that he heard for rock and roll tone, and he was curious, as we all are, as Premier Guitar employees, how that front of house mixes these amp sounds because of what
we have.
He does.
This one right here is number two. This is a real one. This isn't a reissue. This is like a 72, I think. And it is the only live cabinet that's mic'd.
Okay.
That goes to front of house. Down below us is an ISO cab, big giant box with a 212 cabinet in it that is also another head powering that also goes to front of house.
And that's, I'm assuming, the one here
it
says ISO.
Yeah, exactly. Good one.
College.
You could do this. and Pab mixes the blend and just, you know, gets it all dialed in. And I have five stacks in front of me here behind this curtain is five stacks. And in the arenas, I have two stacks over there. Stevie has two cabinets over here as well. So it's, as he walks across, it's a solid wall. He doesn't lose any sound. And it's like, again, that's part of dialing in the stage every day. We make sure that it's a good walk and there's no holes in the stage, because he doesn't wear ears.
Yeah.
He's got to have that sound. So it's a lot more in depth. Like I said, it's the easiest guitar rig I've ever been associated with, probably, but it's also probably the hardest gig I've ever had.
Yeah.
Just because of the potential for things to go south really quickly, and also for it, a little thing to not be right. It's a big thing. There is no second chance. There's, you know, it's good.
And then the cabinets that you touched on, they're all loaded.
Oh yeah.
And
he uses greenbacks.
Okay.
He uses 25 watt slushing greenbacks, and then you'll talk, you know, over for
they're
the Stevie.
Right?
Oh yeah, it's all on. It will, as you swing by, it will blow your head right off as you're going by. It's great. It's the way that it should be.
All right. Trace, thank you very much for allowing us to come down to Atlanta, check it out. Appreciate it. I'm sure there's a lot of things I forgot to ask.
Oh, me too.
This is Angus Young's rig, man. SGs and Marshalls. And we're going to check out Stevie's gear with Greg, his tech, so we'll check it out.
You guys are going to have a blast. And you're
going to
see the show, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, you can't come without seeing the show.
No, I got the cannons.
Thanks, all
right.
Guys.
All right, everyone. We moved over to Stevie's world. Stevie is the nephew of Angus and Malcolm. And you might recognize this if you're an AC/DC fan. I'm here with Greg Howard. Greg, please tell us about this instrument.
This is Malcolm Young's 63 Gretsch Jet Firebird. This is his number two. His number one is at home with him in Australia. But this is Stevie's number one. So it's his, it used to be red, obviously. He took the finish off just like he did his number one. Originally had a middle pickup that he added, humbucker, took that out. Mm-hmm. So basically it's pickup, volume, out. And Stevie uses a cable, no wireless. What makes these kind of sound unique is the Burns vibrato that's not used, but because of the string length behind, it kind of gives it a different feel. And Stevie uses 12s with a wound G.
Wow.
So it goes the Dario 56 to 12.
And what's the Filtertron in there?
It's the stock Filtertron.
Okay.
I would assume this is the stock one, or at least a vintage one. Because this, and I actually had to look at this pot. It was a little scratchy when I first started, and it was dated. I dated it to 1976.
Okay.
So, and I didn't want to change it. Nothing gets changed unless it absolutely yeah. has to be.
Do you know if through Stevie or Malcolm, like how long he's had this one specifically?
I don't know.
Okay.
But I think I'm sure he's had it a long time.
Yeah.
So this was his, you know, his number two for many, many, many years.
He has a lot of stories to tell, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Unique sounds.
So. Yeah. And is this like with Angus, does he use this all night, if, assuming he doesn't go out of tune or break a string? Or
yeah, he uses this all night unless he goes out of tune. And if he goes out of tune, we switch to the number two guitar just for one song, and then it's straight back to this one.
Why does he prefer to go cable versus going wireless? Like,
well, he stands right on the edge of the drum riser. He's literally 5 feet from me.
Okay.
And then he walks up, does his background vocals, walks right back. He and Cliff both same thing. He and Malcolm and Cliff the same thing for forever.
Yeah.
So they always stand right next to the drum riser. They look at each other. They stay in sync.
Tight, yeah.
Yeah. Super tight all night, and then except for the BVs, he's right there. So.
Well, let's take a look at the number two.
Sure. So this is Stevie's number two, which is actually. Belongs to him. Malcolm gave this to him. It's actually a left-handed 63 Jet Firebird, black, and super rare. I've never seen another one. I've never seen another left-handed. Obviously, he plays it righty, but you can tell it's a lefty because it has double inlays.
Yeah.
So, but this was Stevie's guitar in Starfighter and in his band for years when they opened for AC/DC in the 70s and 80s. And this is a gray guitar, and this we go to when there's any kind of tuning issues.
Okay.
And he'll play it for, like I said, one song, maybe two sometimes, very rarely. He only played it on one song the last show we did.
And you mentioned the last on the last guitar, the only thing you had done to, you looked at to the pot. Is there anything you did to this one at all?
I haven't done anything to this one. It's basically, you know, obviously the electronics have been changed, and same thing, pickup, volume, jack.
And this one, it was pretty obvious in the first one, there was some padding or stuffing inside the guitar.
Yeah,
is there stuff in there?
There's actually no stuffing in this one.
Must not have the feedback.
But it does, because of the middle pickup not being there, it doesn't have as much feedback. And you can see there's a little bit of, Stevie plays so hard, there's pick dust. Whenever I go to change strings, it's just pick dust all over the guitar. You see it a little bit better on the black one.
Let's check out the other two Gretches.
Yep. So this was one of Malcolm's spare guitars. Obviously, no Burns vibrato, it's been removed. It's got a stop tailpiece. Says Gretsch on the headstock, not a Gretsch.
Hmm.
Made by JD in the UK. Same guy that made Iommi's SGs, made some SGs for Angus. So made Malcolm some Gretsch style stuff. This got used. This was originally Stevie's number two when I first started with him, and we switched to the black one just because the string tension's different and the black one is closer in tone to the number one, so. But still a cool guitar.
Yeah, and it's a gift from his uncle.
Yeah. And then this is a brand new Gretsch Custom Shop. Steve Stern made this. Champagne Sparkle.
That's beautiful.
Stevie wanted this not for AC/DC, but for mostly the studio stuff, so he left all the electronic stock. The tailpiece is non-functional, but still and it's a copy of the Burns, and so, but still has the string tension and a little bit of relicking, but just a beautiful guitar.
Light.
These guys do great work.
Yeah, it's real light, but it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And just to clear it up, all 12s, wound G, and all the guitars.
On all this, on all the stage guitars, this has 11s on it.
Okay. Cool. Well, let's check out the amps.
Yep.
Cool, Greg. Talk to me about amps. I'm assuming Marshalls.
Yes, Marshalls. So Stevie goes from the cable, actually into this little Moore Pure boost pedal, which I use on TNT only just to fatten the signal up. It's not no boost. It's just a little bit of EQ. It's down, all the way down.
Oh, okay.
So I just a little bit of EQ, and I basically tune it to by ear pretty much every night if it's a little off. It's just to thicken up because Stevie plays a solo rhythm part at the beginning of TNT. That's it. And then it goes into a radial JD7, and that distributes out to 5 amps. So number one amp is all Malcolm's amps. Malcolm's number one, 1971 Metal Front Marshall Super Bass. It has a mod on it. It has an extra tube for slaving it out in the studio. We don't use that live, so it's basically stock.
There's no master on these ones?
There's no master on any of them. And we're only using the bass channel. So number one's the 71 Super Bass. Number two is a 1966, 66, late 66, early 67, JTM45-100. Super white panel, you know, very few of these. I have three of them in my rig.
Wow.
So that's the number two. Number three is a 1976 Super Bass, pretty much stock. Those are all running six cabinets on stage. So I've got six running on stage on this side. So two of the top cabinets I'm not running, just to keep the feedback from us, since Stevie has a semi-hollow. And then I'm also running four Angus cabs on this side. And then I run another 67 Super Bass. I'm sorry, 67 JTM45-100, another white panel. That's for my ISO cab, so that goes to front of house. And then also a 67, very early 67, Black Flag Super Lead, which drives a couple of cabinets on Angus's side. And my spare is a 66 JTM45-100 white panel, you know. And I think I at least have at least another white panel somewhere in my spares.
These are out of Malcolm's collection, so I assume maybe some of these were used on records?
Yes. They have labels on them that say Studio 1, Studio 2, Studio 7, whatever. I mean, these guys have a lot of Marshalls.
And to clear up any misconception, I know this is Stevie's rig now, or he's using it. Malcolm obviously was here for the longest time. Was there any effects that they're using besides the booth?
No, pretty much that's pretty much it. This is pretty much unchanged, except for the JD7 is just a newer, you know, version to distribute the signal.
Gotcha.
There was some custom switchers in here, and we also use a Kakusu for power, and I run it at 236, which is a good voltage. It gives it a little bit more clarity.
And is he also running 25-watt Celestial Greens?
No, we're running vintage 30s.
Oh, all right.
So that's a little tighter, a little cleaner.
Different sound.
Different sound.
All right, I think we got everything, man. I appreciate it, Greg.
Yeah, thank you.
Covering Stevie's gear, covering Angus's rig. AC/DC, man, I can't say enough. Thank you guys, Greg and Trace, appreciate it. Rig Rundown, Chris Keys.
Don't forget to sign up for PG Perks, your all-access pass to exclusive gear giveaways and discounts on PremierGuitar.com.